Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Oh, my goodness. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. My pleasure just to have all of the technology working and to actually be able to have power, internet, and phones. We have both JB and Captain Kirk here. Hi, fellas.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good.
I can walk out on
this week, but
you got
the blue bonnet brew off next week. Guy's got to have, you know, his priorities. I happen to be a micro brew guy,
so.
I'm happy that you enjoy micro brews. I think that a lot of you may have tried to tune in last week and got radio silence. I was in Virginia last Friday, and that storm, I think it was called Riley, which was a northeaster, moved through there with 70-mile-an-hour winds, so hurricane-strength winds, and they blew for three straight days, and we lost just scores of trees, many 200-year-old trees, but the entire community lost power, lost internet, and lost phones, and this is a show that is absolutely impossible to do without power, internet, and phones. You need all three. And we had none of the three. You know, it was interesting because a few weeks ago, I actually joined JB and Kirk via cell phone. But when the terrestrial old-fashioned phones go down and the internet goes down and power goes down, everybody uses their phone, and the cell towers get so overwhelmed, they stop working. So I couldn't even use my cell phone. So anyway, back in Ohio, nice to be with you. And we're going to begin tonight by going over some old material. I just want to reemphasize one of the most profound conclusions to a meeting, particularly since it's indicative of the covenant, what Yahweh wants from us, expects from us, is willing to do on our behalf. But I want to start there, and then we'll transition to 17:1, which begins the next meeting between Yahweh and Abram. So here is Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 15:5. This is not what you will read in the King James or New American Standard or Living Translation, whatever that might mean, since it's neither living nor a translation, although it is new in the sense of novel. Now, look up and pay attention. This is Hannah, of course. Behold, something important is being accentuated. Be observant at this moment in time, listening carefully to the insights being emphasized. Notice the details in this statement and consider the context, because surely it will change your perspective. the word, the insight and instruction of Yahweh, move closer to him, approaching to say, this suggestion and notion is a concept and provision, this individual within the scope of the idea being proposed, shall not be the recipient of your inheritance. He was speaking, of course, of the gentleman from Damascus. Nothing good happens in Damascus, and no one from Damascus is part of the covenant, something that Pauline Christians ought to consider. On the contrary, and as a condition, the means to show the way to the beneficial relationship shall be brought forth, continually extended, and delivered with unfolding consequences throughout time from your inner being, and as a result of your judgment. This will be the inheritance for you. So, he took him in such a way that enabled him to participate with him outside to an expansive place. And he said, please, please, I am asking and encouraging you with a sense of urgency and focus to observe and to choose to consider the heavens and the spiritual realm and accurately relate to them, while of your own free will making a declaration regarding this event, which is designed to provide documented proof of the agreement, while enumerating and verifying the qualities associated with the light of the stars and the heavenly powers, demonstrating what it would be like to exist as light if, whenever and as often as you are able to actually comprehend, genuinely understand, and thereby endure forever, showing that you are capable of recognizing the meaning of this information, which empowers you to actually and continually accomplish something vitally important, overcoming all adversarial factors, and thereby prevailing by attaining the capacity to experience something extraordinary, daring to possess and process the implications of this, grasp the meaning, and boldly embody the attitude of absolute confidence by accounting for and quantifying these things that are associated with all of this in a written document. And he made a promise to him, saying, your extended family will actually exist like this, always possessing the characteristics inherent therein, speaking of light, the being, a spiritual being in heaven, appearing in this manner and in this place. Think of the power of that, the stunning implications of all of that, of God explaining exactly what he is offering to Abraham, to his descendants, to the children of the covenant, taking them into heaven, transforming them into light, enabling them to endure forever. And all God is saying is, pay attention to these things. No. Notice what I'm offering you. Accept this. No. Take the time to observe what it is that I'm offering and come to a resolute conclusion of complete confidence that this is what awaits you and what I'm proposing to give you. So he took Abraham to the place he is offering to take all of the children of the covenant. And then this is what's so powerful. This is the conclusion. And so he, Abram, completely trusted and totally relied upon Yahweh. And no faith, no profession. Was there a profession here? If there was a profession of faith, I must have missed it. If there was a declaration of faith, I sure as hell miss that too.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a gospel of grace here, boy, that must have slipped by without being noticed. If there was a New Testament here, I don't recall seeing it. God showed Abraham what he was offering in terms of transforming him into light and bringing him to the spiritual realm of heaven. And based upon Abraham processing that, observing it, accepting it, Yahweh said, and he completely trusted and totally relied upon Yahweh. I don't even see a but I Paul say here, I don't see a, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son here. I don't see a Jesus Christ here or even a Yosha here.
Or 600 things you have to do from Maimonides.
Yeah, you know, I don't see a 613 seeds within the pomegranate here, according to Maimonides. You know, I don't see a Talmud here. I don't see kosher here.
No.
I see Yahweh exposing Abram what he has exposed to all of us.
Yeah.
That he is prepared to transform our flawed and mortal bodies into light, into spiritual energy, so that we can endure and live with him forever. And based upon Abraham observing that, considering that, processing that, accepting that, we are told that Abraham completely trusted and totally relied upon who?
Yahweh.
Yahweh.
Doesn't say the Lord, does it?
Nope.
Doesn't say Jesus, does it?
No.
Doesn't say Jesus.
No, Allah.
Doesn't say the Pauline, the New Testament, does it?
No.
No Hashem.
No Hashem. He trusted and relied upon Yahweh.
Yahweh.
Therefore, based upon this thinking and his plan, he credited and accounted it as innocence and righteousness to him. So, after Abraham had walked away from his country, from religion and politics, from the social customs of man, and came to engage in a relationship with Yahweh, embracing, accepting, trusting in Yahweh and what he had to offer, Yahweh said, that makes you righteous, makes you right, makes you vindicated. Tzedak. That was all that was required. But that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't faith. It was coming to trust and rely upon Yahweh based upon observing what he had asked for and what he was offering. And based upon that, God said, I'm going to credit and account these conclusions, this willingness to walk away from religion and politics and country and societal customs, the family of man, and your willingness to observe what it is that I have asked and what I am offering, and accept it, and trust and rely upon me, I'm going to credit you, therefore, with being right. Express ticket to heaven. No professional faith, no evangelist, no New Testament, no Jesus, no Christ, no Lord. No church, no baptism. Folks, that is profound.
You don't even get a little brochure.
It's all there. I mean, I don't think there is, well, I will tell you quite honestly that my translation, the Amplified Translation of Bereshit 15:5, well, I'd gladly defend it if somebody wants to challenge it. But I will gladly say that, yeah, that is fully amplified considering the full implication of every word. But when it comes to 15:6, that's child's play to translate it. There is nothing to it. You know, aman means to trust and rely upon. That's all it means. To share, to depend on, to have unwavering confidence in, to recognize the trustworthy nature of Yahweh. And it says, Yahweh, Yod, Hey, Wah, Hey. Therefore, based upon this thinking and his plan, he credited and accounted it as, and that's Chesab. He decided and determined. You know, the one thing that I want to know is Yahweh's response. I want to know how Yahweh decides. You know, somebody wrote me the other day, and I shared it with a number of people, and they were having a real problem with the fact that Jesus, if they had the name right, could not die for our sins. And they quoted two passages out of the Christian New Testament. And, you know, I said, listen, I didn't come up with the plan of Pesach followed by matzah and makorim. You know, I did not invent the concept of the Passover lamb or associate Yahusha with the Passover lamb. Not my plan. If you don't like it, take it up with Yahweh.
That's fair.
It's Yahweh's plan.
Yeah.
And Yahweh's perspective on these things, on what he is offering in Pesach in terms of the doorway to life and matzah, the means to Sadat, perfection, to being right, leading to Bakurim, adoption into his family, with seven sevens later in Shavuot, where we experience what Abram observed, to be enriched and empowered, transformed into light. That's Yahweh's plan. He came up with the means that he thought was best to achieve that plan. And it's really important to know, and if you want to spend time with him, accept, trust his plan. He did not consult with me on this. My guess is he didn't consult with you fellows either.
No.
I don't recall any point where Yahweh said, you know, this is the best I can do. If you can do better, you know, let's discuss other alternatives. Now, in this statement, Yahweh says, therefore, based upon this thinking and his plan, he credited and accounted it as innocence and righteousness, tzedakah, vindicating him. That was Yahweh's conclusion based upon what Abram observed and concluded. That's all that matters. Doesn't matter what the Pope thinks. Doesn't matter what the President thinks. Doesn't matter what the majority think. All that matters is how did Yahweh respond to what Abram had done? That's it. We're not asked to improve it, to change it, just to understand it. I don't know what's difficult about that, or why anyone would believe the lies that Paul spewed out about that Abram didn't have the Torah, therefore it was righteousness was based on faith. You know, that was the argument that he spewed out in that rubbish called Galatians. Right here it said that the word was written, which makes Abram literate. And that Yahweh's word appeared to Abram and then revealed the truth. And that based upon that, Abram came to trust and rely upon Yahweh. And based upon that, Yahweh said, then from this moment on, you're vindicated. You're right. So I wanted to begin there. I know we've gone over that before, but I'm rather fond of that. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know what's more important than having an appreciation for and a working knowledge of and an acceptance of Yahweh's position on transforming us into light, on making us immortal, of accepting us, of saying, you're right. I mean, the whole world wants to know how to be saved, and Yahweh is saying it right here. I think it's rather important to pay attention to that.
Clear as day.
Clear as day. All right.
You didn't take up a collection.
Right. Yeah. So here we go. This is 17:1. This is the next meeting. When Abram, which means father who lifts up, increases, rises, and grows, father who enhances capabilities and status, providing added aptitude, competency, and proficiency, was a son of 99 years. Boy, I'm never going to be that old. I don't know about you guys, but, oh, I know about you guys. You're not going to be that old either.
No.
When Abram existed as a Ben, a child of 99 years. You know, it's kind of funny that we use Ben here, son.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham's 99 years old. Who is going to call a 99-year-old man son?
Son.
Other than Yahweh. Abram's name may have meant father who lifts up. But from Yahweh's point of view, Abram at 99 was just a child. His child. So he was a son of 99 years. Then Yahweh was seen appearing to. Well, if Yahweh is seen appearing to Abram, and Yahweh was seen walking in the garden with Adam, can you tell me how Jesus' return is the second coming?
Hardly. We got a number cruncher problem.
We have a outcome map problem here with Christianity, don't we? Yahweh was seen. Well, what does Ra'ah mean other than seen?
Nothing.
No, I mean, it's
I mean, it can appear, but what's the difference between seen and appear? Revealed to? Shown to? Viewed by? Observed? Perceived? Ra'ah, by the way, Ra'ah is one of the really wonderful words in Hebrew. The same word can have three very different meanings depending on how it's used. Ra'ah means, the primary meaning is a verb, means to be seen. This was written as a verb because it was written in the Nifl imperfect, where the subject, Yahweh, carries out and receives the action of the verb with ongoing consequences which would unfold throughout time. Written as a verb, Ra'ah means to be seen, to appear, to be observed, to be viewed. And that is using the perception of sight. But Ra'ah can also mean shepherd. And what's interesting, too, is that Ra'ah is one of the Ra words, which can mean a pastor who misleads. So it's one of those words that you really have to be perceptive in terms of the context to translate it accurately. So Yahweh was seen appearing to Abram, and he said to him, this is the creator God of the universe appearing to, I want to go out on a limb here and say that Abram was within the top five most important people in human history.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my personal favorite. Everybody knows that Dode is my personal favorite. I think Dode's the most important person ever lived. Now, there are people who would say, it'd be Moshe because he was the one that scribed the Torah.
Okay.
That's what makes horse racing, right? You can pick yours, I'll pick mine. But you could certainly say that, you know, Moshe and Dode might be more important than Abram. And some might say that Yosha was more important than either of the two. Okay. So those could be your top three. You know, Noach was really important. Adam was really important. And then there were prophets like Yahshua, Isaiah, that were really important. Eliah. A lot of people were important. I think it would be hard to put Abraham outside the top four. Now, I say that because a lot of people would say, well, man, it's fair to say Abraham is the first long story in the Torah. I mean, it's a brief accounting of Yahweh's relationship with Adam, very brief. There's a brief, a little longer, but still a fairly brief presentation of Yahweh's relationship with Noah, and it's all about covenant. You know, Adam was a playful relationship. Noah was a working relationship. And then here comes Abram, and Abram embodies the covenant, but it's a very friendly relationship, embodying the covenant. So you could make a case, since the preponderance of Bereshith is focused on this one man and his relationship with Yahweh as the covenant is being conceived, I would think you could make an argument this is the most important person who ever lived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Yahweh introduces himself, what does he say? I am the God of
Abraham,
and Yaakov, right? He says, I am the God of Yisrael, which would be the God of Yaakov, who was the grandson of Abraham. Mm-hmm. So there would be an argument could easily be made. Abraham's the single most important who ever lived. And so now you're having the reason I want to bring that up is Yahweh not only was seen by and appeared to Abram, he said to him, Amar. Now, since it'd be hard to put Abram out of the top four most important person who ever lived, don't you think that if you wanted to know Yahweh, you'd really be concerned about? Yeah, you might care.
About you might look at him as an example.
Yeah, as what God had to say to him. You wouldn't be so fixated on but what I, Paul, say, but instead would care about what Yahweh, the creator God of the universe, had to say to this man that clearly is the father of the covenant and therefore of God's family.
Abraham's a perfect example for us to look to because Abraham, like us, came to know Yah later in his life. You know, Adam, came into existence in Yah's presence. Dode was raised in a culture and had the Torah. Abraham was way late in his life when he came to know Yahweh. And that's us.
And
we all came to know Yahweh late in our life.
That is correct. All of us. Now, Dode is the notable example. He began young and then kind of fizzled out. Yahweh's love for him didn't fizzle out. But Dode was so passionate. You know, one of the things about being extraordinarily passionate is that candle burns so brightly. That after a while, there's just so much that a person could do. I just think, Dode, it was just the passion exuded from his every event, every word, every lyric, every note that he sang and lived with Yahweh. And it did, finally, it was more than one frail man could do. And I don't want to besmirch that because, the legacy that Dode left is the greatest legacy in world history. The only thing even compared to it is the legacy that Yahweh revealed through Moshe. There is a difference, though, I think, in the legacy that Yahweh left via Moshe versus the legacy that he left via Abraham or Dode, in the sense that really all we have from Moshe himself is the body.
Deuteronomy.
Yeah, the body. Words, where Moshe interpreted the first four books of the Torah for us. I said, I want to repeat here what's important and how it applies to your life. And I want to make certain that you understand how throughout time you're going to be able to determine what is of Yahweh and what is not. This is the test for you to deploy. And with Abram, all we know of him is what Yahweh conveyed of these conversations to Moshe some 500, 600 years after they occurred. But with Dode wrote the lyrics.
He got a lot.
Dode wrote the lyrics to those songs. Was Yahweh, did Yahweh inspire him? Yeah. And Yahweh's inspiration was perfection with Dode. But a lot of these conclusions, just by Yahweh's love for Dode, it is obvious that much of what Dode wrote, he perceived on his own initiative. So that makes it extraordinary. But here we have Yahweh speaking to Abram. I am God Almighty. Okay. You know, if you're going to be somebody important, that works.
That's about the top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am El Shaddai. You know, at one time in my life, I got to say I was CEO and founder of a public company. Okay. So it was one little pipsqueak public company. So, yeah, I invented it. I pulled the people together and we built it. I raised the money for it. You know, I was its leading salesman and primary advocate. Okay. Big deal. How would you like to be able to say this? I am God.
God Almighty.
Almighty.
El Shaddai. I am the God with the power and ability to honor and expansively fulfill promises. Ane El Shaddai. I am God Almighty. Now, what follows is the antithesis of the way that religions view God. They would say, bow down in fear. Obey me. Submit. No, he says, choose. Of your own volition and of your own initiative to walk by yourself towards my presence and thereby enjoy becoming genuinely perfect, eternally without defect, continuously and entirely right, completely innocent and totally fulfilled, lacking nothing throughout the whole of time. Halak was written in the Hitpael stem, imperative mood. That means that this journey is of our own accord, by ourselves, and of our own free will and initiative. It is our choice and our choice alone, and no one is to interfere, accompany us, or assist us along the way. I am God Almighty. Choose of your own volition and of your own initiative to walk by yourself, la pene ani, towards my presence. Approach my face, moving toward the goal by being directly before me, appearing in front of me while facing me. Can't be bowed down in those circumstances. No. And thereby, hiya. Enjoy becoming genuine. And come to literally and actually exist as a result of your decision. Perfect. Eternally without defect. Continuously and internally right. Completely innocent and totally fulfilled. Lacking nothing throughout the whole of time. Tamim. Remember, Yahweh says that the Torah, this is from a quote from Dode, the Torah is tamim, perfect. Absolutely. And without exception or interruption, right, in complete accord with the truth, genuine, without blemish, blameless, extraordinarily valuable, the prime example, entirely moral, and wholly vindicated throughout the whole of time.
There's no debate on that in any lexicon.
No. So a lot of insights here. I mean, I know that that following this, I got carried away, and so I teed off and provided, I don't know, 7-8 pages of commentary, because there's just so much power there. Yeah, this is one of the conditions of the covenant. Walk to me and enjoy becoming perfect. You know, that's a rather important statement. So, Kirk, before the program, you said that you went about the process of...
I did my normal translation thing, and I look up every word. And I usually try to get every letter as well, just because it's fun to see if it verifies more and more. And, of course, it does. And as you were going over that, I was going over my notes, and like I say, all the lexicons agree on that. I don't like the word perfect, the Tamim, only because it has this connotation with Christians about what they, you know, when you say something that's like, it has that emotive sense, and I like the more concrete version where you're sound and blameless or without blemish or, you know, that's something that can be measured, sensed or whatever.
Yes. You are the same there. The only reason that what perfect means is sound, effective, reliable. You're right in that. It ought not take on a religious veneer, because it does mean as a result of your decision to be without defect, you know, to be entirely right.
Yeah.
You know, to be considered.
Think about it like
fulfilled.
We're talking about the concrete terms. Yeah, it's kind of like with the idea of good and bad. It works as designed. A perfect tool works perfectly as it was designed to work.
The
shovel does, it's the perfect shovel. It does the best job of any shovel at doing its own, what it's designed to do.
Totally performs well,
right?
It may not do well at other things, but it has its intended purpose, and it perfectly performs that intended purpose.
So it's entirely in accord with, if you were entirely in accord with, let's say, truth and fact, then that's what he was. You know, that's why he said, Abraham, wow. So are Tzedak. And it's the same thing with David. David had a lot of flaws, he was totally in tune with what Yahweh, Marley,
His integrity. Let me tell you the one reason why I wouldn't give up entirely, though, on perfect here.
It's in my notes. It's not my favorite.
Yeah, and the reason is that the doorway we walk to eternal life, the previous statement was about being transformed into light and living in the spiritual realm with Yahweh and enduring forever. That's Pesach, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. And you're being perfected.
And being perfected is matzah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As long as everybody's on the same page, and that's what we're talking about, then on so many of these words, people get thrown off sometimes, and they go, instead of...
Let me tell you one of the things that I like about not using perfect tongue. When Yahweh provides the benefit of matzah for us, we don't want to infer that, therefore, we are perfect from a worldly point of view. Because we're not.
Mm-hmm. No.
We're only perfect from Yahweh's point of view. And that's all that matters.
Which is the point of view to be perfect.
Right. Yeah. Showed his beloved son, who was deemed right and vindicated and righteous by Yahweh, Tzedak, was the furthest thing from perfect as a human being.
He screwed up a lot.
But he was right with Yahweh, therefore he was vindicated. So, Tamim here does not infer that, you're holier than thou, and you never swear, and you never lie, and you never cheat, and you're the perfect person. No, it's not what it infers at all. It's, from Yahweh's point of view, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You're vindicated. You're exactly what he wants, what he expects, what he's willing to accept. And that's all that matters.
Now,
we were told that the person that was the most good, the goody-two-shoes of the ancient realm was King Shaul, King Saul. And King Saul, he's in Sheol, Ben. Good got him an express ticket to hell. Dode was the antithesis of that. Dode was never good, but Dode was always right, and he got this express ticket to eternity with Yahweh. So what
the difference is, he never twists anything for his own. But he said, "This is what Yahweh is about. This is what the Torah says." I mean, that's the biggie. That's what you do.
Yes.
Your best ability, what we all try to do, is to the best of our ability, this is what he said as accurately as it can be conveyed in English. That's a good way to be. That's a good way to be.
Yes.
You teach your children the same thing.
Yes.
Isn't it
all right, so you went through the translations, and the first word that you that appealed to you was the last word in 71, which is tamim.
Well, it was what I was sharing with you. I went through all the translations and to verify those, and I have those, and we can go through those as we get to them at some point. I'll throw in my 2 cents. But the thing that was interesting, after I did that, I went back and then I read your commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of pages later, on page 61 in my copy, I may be off a page or two because of whatever. You may have changed a little bit, you and Jackie, by the time we print it. But it was terribly interesting to me, and I was sitting down there, and these things happen usually late at night, and I go, maybe I'm confused here, and I'll wait till the morning, and I'll read what I made notes on. But it was very interesting. I never thought of it this way, and for good or bad, here's what you did. On about page 61, you started speaking of introductions, it was God, not man, who initiated each of these relationships, and then you go into several many paragraphs on, and you say, and firstly, and secondly, and thirdly, and fourthly. And I thought, I was just sitting there and say, okay, well, I'll number these things instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 7. I decided to put Aleph and Bet and Gimel and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And then I, for whatever reason, delete being the fourth one, which is interesting, I wrote down in the column off to the left, I wrote, okay, this is what Aleph means, and this is what that means, and so forth. And then I went back and started reading your commentary, and I said, either OCW is really sharp, or he is really in tune with Yahweh, because just by introducing, this may seem silly to some people, so I apologize. But when you go one, and it's Aleph, and then you look at here, Yahweh is an authority, and he's introducing himself, and this is what this is what your comment basically was. You know, he was introducing, let me pull it over here. He was introducing, this is the introduction, that first section was the introduction to Yah and his authority and power to fulfill the promise. And then I went down to...
in fact, the first point was, by so doing, Yahweh is revealing several interesting aspects of his nature. First, he enjoys the company of people. That's why the LF is a lamb amongst the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he enjoys the company of people. He leads by getting down with us. It indicates that he created us for this purpose, and why he invites us to celebrate the seventh festival feast with him each year. Of course, what is the first festival feast? It's Yahweh himself as the Passover lamb.
All right. So he's saying,
why his government model is
already
on the nature of the human family.
Conveyed by Aleph. You know, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. And then I said, I pursued it a little bit, and we went to your second thing when you were talking about second, since he instigates the covenant. The number two is written in Hebrew with a bet, and that's the floor plan of the family home. And if you extrapolate a little bit, that's the family, that's the plan. That's pretty much what he's introducing there. That's your commentary on that. Compared to, so I thought, well, that's good. He's two for two. And then I went on to the third one. It says, and that's the third letter, of course, is Gimel. And that's a foot, a walking symbol. And we were talking about, and down here, the heart of this is willingness to listen and then respond. It requires walking away from the popular human institutions and walking towards Yahweh. So by the third, it happens to be exactly what the third letter means. And I thought, well, boy, that's really, at this point I'm going, man, ooh, this is really funny.
Walking away from man and walking towards God. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all about the gimbal, the foot.
Yeah, the gimbal. So I said, now, Yahweh obviously knows all this, but it's interesting you put it all together that way. Then we got to number four. Four is the offer. Your commentary on that talks about the offer he's given on how to do it. It's the doorway home, which happens to be the delete. It is a flap opens up to get into the Pesach door. Four is also, it's got four corners, and I added on that. I said, you know, there are four corners to this door, the way it's drawn, at least the way I see that it's supposed to be drawn. And four is always of testing, and it's something that you have to do. It's a single file door. You can only get in there. It's not huge for a large group of people. You can walk through single file. And you talked a lot about that. You also gave some commentary on the 40 years ago and so forth and so on. And I thought, wow, you know, this guy's in tune. So I make you.
They don't have to be really sharp. If you know what he's offering, it's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
And you have to go through the door, yeah. So then I got down to five, and I said, let's see if this could be, if this can continue. And by the way, it's easy, accessible entrance to Pesach door, I meant to say. Five, one of the meanings of the henna, or the hay rather, is breath, and it's for eternal life. And that's what Masa is, eternal life. And you mentioned it in there as well. So I thought, wow, that's really moving right along here on the commentary. And people can read all the details later. But Hannah is also a man who's standing up or a woman who's standing up observing, which is engaged as a person. That's why the legs are apart. So you're engaged. You are continuing to walk, and you're looking and observing and going, behold. You know, that's really rather phenomenal. Then you went to six. And six is listening to act upon Yahweh's guidance and participate in the covenant. And it's about increase. And the six, the number six, of course, is the law.
The adding increase.
Yeah, adding increase. So,
be joined to.
So now if you say Pesach now, let's identify Pesach with delete, number four. Matzah. And Bakurim, of course, matzah would be with the hay.
Mm-hmm.
The increase, of course, happens on Bakurim when we're increased, and you can talk about that in there a little bit. And I'm thinking, wow, now we've got the whole, what you're seeing is this whole conversation and the whole plan being identified in these numbers if it continues on this way. And I thought, well, that's kind of funny. And so, in a wonderful way. And then, let's see, with, what do we have next is Shabuah. Did I get six in Greek? No, we got that. So, now we have seven is a Zain, or a Zayin. And that's a interesting letter because it's a plow. You plow a field, and the way they plow in the field in ancient days, ancient Hebrews would take a mark, and they studied on that mark, and they would drive the plow with the pull by the cow or the ox that mark, which is very significant in the way we approach that. It's usually, obviously, you'd want to plow a straight line. So the straight going to that mark is our journey. And I thought, how interesting that it's a mark, it's used as a mark. It talks about a mark because you have to have the Zion is the marks along the way or the signpost along the way. And I thought, that's pretty cool. And then we have, so you have two parts of the seven-part plan. And by the way, a plow obviously is a harvesting tool, right? And it's sorted by, and it needs to be sorted by kind as well. Now you have two of the Moed Mikris that do that. Teruah, the one that will take us home. And then you have the bigger one on Yom Kippur.
Yes.
And those are both harvest, right?
Yes.
That's pretty impressive.
Yes.
Now, what you did is stop at that at 7 point. At the 7 point, you stopped at your prosperity. But then I was thinking about that, and I said, well, wait a minute. That's true of every letter in the first seven letters. And the eighth letter, of course, is a chet. Now, a chet is a symbol of offense. Now, I know it wasn't a gan. I don't want to get in that argument. And one of the ways that it satisfies me that it was not a gan, but it was a chet, as much as it'd be nice because a gan almost looks like an eight, and we use that for eternity and everything. But let's put that off the side a minute, because if it was a gan, don't you think it would have appeared that way in Psalm 118?
Yeah, of course.
I'm sorry, 119.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not there. And right. And the older one is everything I've read on commentaries. The oldest one is the chet, but chet is a symbol of offense. An offense separates and protects. But it's, and when we arrive home in Sukkot,
right.
It'll be like the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, exactly.
And
a wall
will have to protect the covenant. It won't be like when Abraham and them had a fence around them. They were protected.
Mm-hmm.
That was a special, special place. They had a chet around them, whether there was guarded by Malacca, whether there was actual building, a fence of some kind that was around there. The symbolism is still the same, and we'll have that protecting us all through Sukkah, or
exactly.
At least the people, but
right.
We won't need it.
Yeah,
for the
and ours will be a garment of light. I mean, it's going to be
garment
a...
Light.
Right.
You can't destroy light.
And, you know, you might say, well, that's constraining. No, it's protecting. For example, when we are transformed into energy-based spiritual beings, and we are released to explore and experiment in the universe, you better have a protective fence, if you will, or a shield, let's call it a shield, around you. Or what happens if you play improperly with a black hole?
You know,
what happens if you cause a star to go supernova? I want a shield around me.
Mm-hmm.
I want my soul protected throughout eternity, and so the chet.
Well, you know, what's the
shield.
First thing you do? You know, they tell you to do if you ever get stranded in the woods, stranded on an island. You know, what's the first thing you do?
Yeah. Shelter,
and cover, protection.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The elements are only
one for survival.
Right.
Well, when I brought it up, I wasn't trying. To me, it was just fascinating, but the thing that was most fascinating about it was that in the first eight letters of Yahweh's alphabet that he wrote, Islam, he basically tells you the very story that we've been studying here in chapter 10.
Yes.
And what is most fascinating beyond that is that every time you look deep into what Yahweh says, and I'm not knocking all the mathematics of this or or all the other studies that we do along the side to reinforce what Yahweh said. When you really look at just the words, and when any angle you want to look at it, whether it's the grammar, whether it's the letters, whether it's the words themselves, and where the verbal roots and the sentences and so forth, on and on. Yahweh, I've never seen anything like this where the language is so precise on every dimension, every level, that you can look at it, it still tells us, conveys the same story over and over again. And anybody who thinks that they got to have Paul to communicate because Yahweh can't communicate, they ain't looking at the same thing I'm looking at.
Correct.
I mean, this stuff is just brilliant.
Yes, it's brilliant. And the deeper, more closely you examine, the more you come to understand. That's why when Yahweh took Abram out to see the stars and understand the power that's inherent in life and the eternal nature of light, and then took him into the spiritual realm where our souls are transformed into light. He was empowered with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just as you looked at the letters of the language that Yahweh selected, and you were enlightened and empowered by the path that they clearly provide through his mikre to his home.
Yeah. And you can maybe interpret it another way, but I mean that's pretty strong evidence for me.
Well, and I'll tell you, you don't have to be, people are like, oh, I'm not smart enough to understand. You don't have to be that smart.
I'm doing his nice chart, though.
I'm smart in some areas. Language arts was always my hard struggling point in school, and I still am able to do this. Yeah, I was the class I had to struggle to even get a B in, was my grammar classes and my English language arts and all that. That never came good to me. I was great with the sciences and stuff like that. I could do great in that. But with those classes, it was all I could do to try and keep up. But I can do this because it's not that hard. It's looking at the material, looking at the resources, and then it's obvious most of the time. Very rarely is there a whole lot of digging. Yeah, you can dig and get some nuances that you might miss, but the basics, you can get that easily.
Yeah,
well, that brings
up JB, that's been my aches and pains over this for so many years, is that there are so many profound insights that we have derived from Yahweh's word just by taking him seriously, paying attention to what he said, closely examining and carefully considering each letter of each word, each stem, conjugation, and mood, and what the words actually mean, that it is frustrating that as easy and as straightforward as it was to develop all of these insights, no one else has done it the past 2,000 years.
Yeah. The one thing that is a bit tricky for our people is there's a natural tendency when you go into it to want to justify what you already believe, reinforce your preconceived notions. And you really have to learn to leave that behind and just go where the evidence leads you. That is probably the hardest part for most people because they're raised with these ideas. They grew up with these ideas. It's part of who they are. And so when they read it, they want to figure out, okay, well, how does this fit in with what I already know? Rather than changing what they know, they want to try and figure out how to make it fit. They want to cram the square peg into the round hole.
The conspiracy theorists will take little tidbits and tie those tidbits to their preconceived notions, and they'll ignore all evidence to the contrary. Those who are overtly political will do the same thing. Those who are religious always do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so the way that people process information is to attribute it to and tie it to what they've already been led to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason that the first condition, the lone prerequisite of the covenant, is to walk away from your country, from societal customs, from the family of man, is that until you're willing to do that, none of this is going to make any sense to you. Because Yahweh's presentation of who he is and what he's offering, what he's asking in return, is the antithesis of what man has deceived men and women into believing over the years. So it is essential that your attitude changes. You have to; it has to be entirely different. And I think most people, in fact, I think that the reason why no one has come up with these profound insights into who God is, what he's asking from us, what he's offering in return, in the past 2,500 years, is because very, very few people are willing to let go of the lies and go where the words lead.
Well, that was what I was going to make. That was the point I was going to make. I don't, 2,500 years or over 2,000 years at least, and you go, why is it no one has done that? I mean, people wrote these lexicons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me ask you a question.
I think a lot of people have realized the errors of it, but they've chosen to dismiss everything as a whole rather than go into it. I think that's why some people like Thomas Jefferson, who came to recognize the errors of a lot of that religion, he never went any farther because he wasn't really all that interested. He just threw it all away because he's like, this is bullcrap. And people recognize that and just dismiss it all.
Well, Thomas Jefferson realized that Paul was not to be trusted. I mean, he realized that Paul corrupted the whole thing. And so he came to that realization that Christianity, because it was Pauline, was absolutely wrong. But he was unable to view Yahusha in the context of the Torah and of Yahweh, because he just didn't have accurate translations of those things, and therefore, as a revolutionary, he didn't see it. He understood what was wrong, and had someone been there to point out what was right, it would have profoundly changed his perspective in his life.
That's like I always look at one of my favorite people growing up was I was a huge fan of Cosmos and Carl Sagan. And he was famously an agnostic. But he's one of those people like I would have loved to knowing what I know now, I've had a chance to talk with him because I think given the mindset he had, I think he's the type of person that would have been open to this possibly.
Right.
But
it
wasn't his interest.
Right.
He was not humanity. He didn't want to know God.
Right. There's a reason that so few people, and in fact, no one until 15 years ago, came to perceive Yahweh and his nature, his word, his offering, the benefits, what he's expecting of us accurately. It's a combination of factors. The first, of course, is the preponderance of people are played for fools. They are told what to believe, and they believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They do it without thinking. And
they go along to get along.
Oh, they go along to get along, whether it be their politics or their religion or their just socialist, secular, humanist view of life. They've been indoctrinated to the point where they're incapable of even processing any of this. And the vast preponderance of people beyond that have no interest. This is, you talked about Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson's love in life was governance.
Mm-hmm.
And how to profoundly change governance so that it was bottom up rather than top down. No military, no central bank, very limited power of government. Let the people have the influence, all free will, free choice. That was his passion. And so, unless you're passionate about the things of Yahweh, of God, you aren't going to figure this stuff out because it takes time. It's got to be.
It's
the most important person.
If it is not your number one priority, you will never come to know it.
That is
it
true.
Has to be number one priority. I mean, maybe number two. Take care of your family's number one. But number two, if it's not at the top of your priority list, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I would go as far as to say that while you are a like your age, James, where you haven't been married for more than 10 years or so, and you have your first child.
It'll be 10 years in June.
A pretty good guess there. Your priority has to be to your family. And then secondarily, for the family of Yahweh. And balancing those two is not a conflict because they're interrelated, especially in your situation. There's no conflict there. But you notice that Yahweh reached out to fellows like Abraham, who was 99 at this time, and Moshe, who was 80 at the time that he reached out to him. I was 50, almost 50. At the time we began, and so there is a point in life when you become older that either you're so set in your ways that there is no hope for you, you're never going to take God seriously, you're never going to prioritize Him, or you reach the point in your life where you can make Him your top priority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were all in a position to do that, made Him our top priority. And if you're going to pursue this, that needs to be the case. You can't let the obstacles. Okay, Hebrew is an old language. The letters are unique. The letters have changed shape over time. It's evolved. It's it doesn't have past, present, and future tense. All the verbs are relational. There are moods ascribed to verbs. You can't let the fact, it's in Hebrew, slow you down. That's got to be inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's in Hebrew. Look at the
the insights I can glean by the fact that it's in Hebrew.
Yeah.
I have a language that's eternally true and not stuck in time. A language based solely on all of the actions being relational. And all cast in the under the auspices of free will. So you can look at it as a obstacle or an opportunity. You know, the fact that you have the Dead Sea Scrolls, you have the Masoretic Text, you're able to compare the two. Well, that takes time. Is that an obstacle or an opportunity? You have all of the lexicons are published by religious entities. And they all will provide at least one definition that serves to justify their translations. And so you have to have a filter. Is that an obstacle or an opportunity?
The other thing I would say is, don't look at what other people are doing and let that intimidate you. You know, it's like anything. Don't start down like, okay, I'm going to translate, now I'm going to write the next yada yada right now. No, you start small. You start
pick
with a little bit here, a little bit there. Start trying to, pick a word.
Yeah.
Look, he translated it this way. The English translation translated it this way. How did he come up with that? Start small and you build from there. You know, you don't go from never having cooked to cooking a 16-course gourmet meal overnight.
Right.
You start small and you build your way up.
Right. Learn how to boil water and
none of us started with just.
Well, we want to put an egg in.
None of us started doing what we're doing now, overnight. It took a lot of time.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many books it is all total or how many pages and how many edits through the process, but it was an enormous investment of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, after a while, it becomes easier, faster, more insightful, because with each iteration, with each new word, with each affirmation of previous words, with each time Yahweh reaffirms a profound insight or truth, your knowledge and understanding grows.
Mm-hmm.
But and I think you have the perfect word,
investment. Yeah.
It is an investment.
Now,
you put this in, and what you get back is so much more.
That's correct. Now, the other part of it, too, is that to follow the words to where they lead will lead you away from everything man holds dear.
Mm-hmm.
You will not only not be patriotic, you'll be the antithesis of that. You'll be disgusted by it. You not only will not be political, you'll be revolted by politics. You not only won't be religious, you'll find religion to be a deadly plague. You'll find the human society and human thinking to be reprehensible. And so it will lead you away from everything that humankind has been led to revere. And for most people, at least initially, it is tremendously isolating until you realize that you're not being isolated from anything of value, and instead you're forming this inseparable, eternal bond in the most viable relationship ever offered, ever conceived, with Yahweh, who just happens to be God Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the antithesis of isolating. Who would you rather prefer to have a relationship with? God Himself.
Sure.
So there's a lot of reasons that Yahweh, when he greeted Yeshayah for the first time, lamented and noted that he opened the door to his home and no one was there. No one. And he searched throughout all of these chasms of 2,500 years and found no one. Not a single person over that time. Now, there's a reason that he found someone, and that through that someone, he found many others. And it has nothing to do with that individual. And guys, it doesn't have anything to do with you either.
No.
It has all to do with the promise that he made to this man, Abram, who became Abraham. And he's going to honor that promise. And the best way for him to honor that promise is to have that promise known to those he made the promise to. And because we are within a very short time of Yahweh honoring his promise through Kippurim, reconciliations, leading to Sukkah, camping out with Yahweh protected through all time, his message, as he conveyed it, in a manner that those who are willing and are interested in getting to know him and going where the words lead can read it and capitalize upon it, had to have been conveyed and made known at this time. So, fellas, in this regard, we're nothing but implements. Beloved implements, yeah. You know, loves his children and loves working with humankind. That's not a belittling term. An implement in his hands is a noble calling. There is no better calling. But that's what we are. We're signs that he has posted along the way. We're a banner that he has lifted up. And while we are beneficiaries, the primary purpose is that he's going to honor every promise that he made to this man, to Abraham. And he's going to reconcile his relationship with his people. And that's why we may have gone 2,500 years without anyone translating his words accurately, conveying through commentary what do they mean. Continue to exist. The time had come where Yahweh had to make his words available to be understood and acted upon by those who wish to know him. Because we're going to reach a period of time, guys. You know, once we know, it's 2018 as we speak now. We're early part of 2018. Yahweh's year has not yet begun. But 2018, according to man's reckoning, and in 2033, according to man's reckoning, it's going to be all over. That'd be year 6,000 Yah, according to Yah's timeline. And we are just now, 17 years? Oh, not even less than that. We're 15 years. We are 15 years and some change. 15 years and a number of months away from 2033. And as we move towards that time, conditions are going to get far worse. It's going to be hard to even survive. And so the opportunity, the time, the devotion, the investment in Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms to understand who God is, what he is asking, what he is offering, it's just not going to be possible. No one is going to have the opportunity to start from scratch and to write all this out. It had to be written and offered in advance. You're right. Yeah. It has to be available to his children. Because, well, I would never view this as a burden, because it was an investment. One that has paid tremendous dividends. But the opportunity to do what we have done is coming to an end. There was a very narrow window when it could be done. And we still have a few years left.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we're going to be harvested in 2027, it could be 2028. You know, that's
the last of it.
Right. You know, that's pretty much the last of it. So could it be another 7 to 10 years? Yeah, that's what we've got. And we'll continue to convey this message. But it has to be well distributed and available to people, and particularly to the children of Israel. It needs to be available now. That's why God was not in a position to continue to let this go. And you know, it was interesting then that how this manifests is that God did not begin with asking me to correctly and completely convey the message of His Torah teaching, His prophetic insights, and the writings, particularly of those of note. That's not where we began. We began by exposing the most adversarial, the most satanic of all human belief systems, Islam. And it's not just because it is the most adroitly satanic of all religions, of all human, political and military and societal doctrines. Islam is the principal adversary to His children. And not a random choice that it began with Islam. You know, there are a lot of Hindus in the world, almost a billion of them. So,
but they're not sitting around talking about
Israel. Yeah, but they're not talking about Israel. So it couldn't begin with them. It had to begin with Israel's, His chosen people's most fundamental enemy, Islam. And that's where it began. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the first people who attacked Moshe's, the Israelites after they came out of Israel, Egypt, were the Amalekites.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good symbol there.
Forerunners of today's Muslims.
That's the group.
I mean, there's really no difference between the Amalekites and Israel.
No, there's absolutely no difference in the descendancy or how they perform things.
No.
How they do things.
Yeah, they came from the same place, Arabia.
Same God.
With exactly the same belief system.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If they have been, and that's where it began, is sometimes what you really have to know is Babel. I mean, where did Abram begin? Babylon.
Yeah.
You got to know the adversary. If you got to know who he is and how he operates to appreciate the things of God and how different they are. And so, you know, for me, it was through Islam. The ultimate Babel. And then shortly after that, the condemnation of Paul through questioning Paul. And in the midst of all of it, let's convey what Yahweh had to say so that we know it. So it's a powerful statement that God just made on behalf of the covenant. You know, choose of your own volition and of your own initiative by yourself towards my presence, and thereby enjoy becoming genuinely perfect, eternally without defect, continuously and entirely right, completely innocent and totally fulfilled, lacking nothing throughout the whole of time. Now, you know, and so many people have been hoodwinked into saying that Yahweh was requiring that Abraham become perfect. Abraham wasn't capable of becoming perfect. You know, you just look at almost everything the guy did thereafter. It's like dode. They're not perfect.
Yeah.
God isn't saying enjoy becoming perfect. Yahweh is the one who perfected him to make him right, that gave him everything that he needed. Now, why did Yahweh want Abram to choose of his own volition to walk to him so that he could enjoy becoming perfect? Because Pesach is the doorway to life. That was the trip to the stars into the eternal realm of heaven with light being eternal. And matzah being the means to perfection, to being viewed as being right and complete and vindicated by God, which leads to what?
Bekorim.
Right. Becoming a first-born child of God's family. So what does 17:2 say? So that I can choose to actually and continually give my family covenant relationship purpose of understanding by making connections between me and you. And then I will continually increase every aspect of your nature to the greatest extent and the highest degree possible. What follows Bikurim?
Shabuah.
Shabuah. What's the purpose of Shabuah?
Enlightenment and empowerment.
Enlightenment and empowerment. Hasn't he just, these last few statements from 15:5, where I'm going to show you the light of the stars, this idea of being eternal and living in the eternal spiritual realm of heaven, you know, understanding that light is eternal. It's the very measure of what it means to be everlasting in time. And we go from that to, I equated this understanding and this trust and reliance of Abraham that he was right, that he was perfect, that he had walked to him and became perfect matzah. So we went from Pesach, eternal life, to matzah being perfected, so that Yahweh can choose to actually give the bereth, my family covenant relationship, Bikurim, becoming adopted into God's family as his child, to Shabuah. Because to adopt a child, to give birth to a child, is only interesting, is only worthwhile, is only meaningful if that child grows based upon what you contribute to them. For the purpose of understanding, enlightenment, and making a connection between you and me. And then I will actually increase every aspect of your nature. Rabba eth ata. I will intensify your capabilities, enable you to fly, multiplying the magnitude of your dimensionality, enhancing and prolonging your ability to grow, to thrive, and continuously living, augmenting your value and importance. Ba meod, meod, to the greatest extent and highest degree possible. That's the whole story. Those are the benefits of the covenant. Five of them, they're all laid out for you right there. None of this is hidden. And yet, we go back to the same thing. For 2,500 years, not a single person said, here are the five conditions of the covenant as they were laid out and given to Abram. And here's the five benefits of the covenant as they were offered by Yahweh. Not, and there's nothing more important. Not one. 2,500 years. And yet, here it all is. What? Four verses? 15:5, 15:6, 17:1, 17:2? The entire plan.
Let me ask you something, if I may.
Sure.
You're sitting across from Jerry Falwell. I understand him. Mm-hmm. I really do. A preacher.
Mm-hmm.
But you're sitting across from the dean, probably, of his theological department at his university.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you've laid this out for them over a four-hour lunch. And he says, yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
What manner of man is he that he knows that, agrees with that, and he didn't turn in his resignation right then and say, I'm going to change this thing?
Yeah. And I didn't want him to turn his recognition. What I wanted him to do, is after he acknowledged that everything I had said, you know, there's no Jesus, there's no Christ, there's no Trinity, there's no Christmas, there's no Easter, there's no Sunday worship, there's no church, that God's name is Yahweh, that he has seven Moed Mikre, and it's the covenant is afforded, its benefits are afforded to us via Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shabuah, just as we've read here. And that there are these five conditions of the covenant, and that Yahweh only has one covenant. It has never been renewed or changed. And what I wanted him to do was to acknowledge that I have an obligation to those I have misled. To admit my mistake and to tell them the truth. No matter what it costs me. Because if I'm admitting that I was wrong regarding God and that I misled them, and now I'm revealing what I know to be true, how could that cost him anything of any value? That's what I wanted. I realized that as well known as he was with the platform he had, that had he come out and said, all of this Christianity stuff is rubbish.
Here's
the truth according to God. Can you imagine the number of people who would have listened and whose lives would have been transformed?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's what I wanted. That's what I wanted.
I preaching you this, and he didn't. He never changed. He wouldn't give up Jesus.
Yeah.
His life depended on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, even minute half of it. That's why I went so easy when I came to you. I said, well, yeah. I know that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, one argument with me, I knew that. I knew Christmas is crap.
People prefer the lie.
They just do.
They're more comfortable with the lie. They reinforce the lie. Now, they like the lie. You know, when you tell most people what God said and what he likes and what he dislikes, the fact that he hates religion, the fact that he hates politics, that he despises the whole idea of patriotism.
Yeah, you can hear the rattle.
That he doesn't want to be worshipped, you know. You tell people that, and they dislike it. They become angry. The vast preponderance of people do not like who God is. Then you tell somebody how stupid it would be, how disgusting it would be for the creator of the universe to create an inferior being to worship him.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll still go to their worship service. When you tell somebody how stupid it would be to lift God up in praise, when we're so feeble, when instead he's offering to lift us up, and they don't get it. Or this,
just said in the chat room, you know, religion say magnify God, but Yah says, I will magnify you.
And he's already
magnified. Right. And, you know, and by the way, there is nothing I can do to God that would magnify him in one iota. I can bring him pleasure by listening to him, by accepting what he's offering, by enjoying his company. I can bring him pleasure, but I can't magnify him. But he can sure as heck magnify me.
You know, I can do is amplify his word into English. I can attempt to do that.
Right. Yeah.
But that's for my benefit more than his.
It's so obvious that every political scheme is wrong. It's so obvious that every religion is wrong. Stupidly wrong. But, you know, the Hindus are marching now through India and by the million, trying to rewrite the Indian history and constitution so that India is a not only a Hindu state, but that this rewriting of history is used to prove that the Hindu scriptures are valid and true. Now, can you imagine being that stupid? There's like a million gods.
Yeah.
You know, gods with eight arms that are blue and gods that appear on cows.
Yeah.
The cows. I mean, yeah. And elephant heads. I mean, come on, folks. How could you be that stupid? Come on, how could you be so stupid to be a Christian and to believe that God was incompetent and went to a pervert known as Paul to change everything because he couldn't figure it out himself? Or that God picked a pedophile, a rapist, a mass-murdering terrorist to contradict everything he had said in Muhammad, to be a genius, to figure this out. Just have to be reasonable, informed, and go where the truth leads. Well, fellas, we have come to the end of our recording period. And this is a really good place for us to stop, and we'll pick up with 17 too. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that we went back to 15:5, because it ended up, it just pulls the whole story together.
Mm-hmm. 15:5 is context, and you have to have context.
Yeah. 15:5 is Pesach. You know, 15:6 is matzah. And then 17:1 is Bikurim. And 17:2 then becomes it's the whole story.
You really
well, you can't.
Why don't you turn on the lights? There it is.
People have for a very long time, but
now if you read it, you cannot miss it.
Yeah, it's there, and you know, I think we're doing a wonderful service on behalf of Yahweh. I think we've been useful implements in conveying His word.
We've had a good time doing it.
But you know, and one of the things you said, and you said it over and over again to both of you, I think, on the show, is you don't have to be smart. Nothing special about this. It's all there.
No, just plow ahead. Take a word.
Yeah. So, right. Take a word.
Just make sure it didn't
start
mean
with a word. Yeah, start with a word. And, you know, once you find out that shamar doesn't mean to obey, actually the word that most Bibles translate as obey is shama.
Mm-hmm.
And shama means to listen. So once you find out that shama means to listen, not obey, and there's nothing even remotely about obey about it, and then you find that the idea of being observant doesn't mean to keep, as your English Bibles will say, as in, again, a form of obedience to keep something, but instead to observe, closely examining, carefully considering. Once you find those two things, why wouldn't you reject the religious institutions that misled you? You know, once you find that Yahweh's name is Yahweh, and he's the antithesis of a Lord, why would you reject the religious institutions that deliberately misled you? Once you come to realize that the Shabbat is forever, once you come to realize that the seven mikre are forever, and that there's only one covenant, it has never been renewed, and that ultimately it will be reaffirmed, and when it's reaffirmed on the basis of the Torah actually being written inside of us. When you realize that's the antithesis of the two most popular religions, why wouldn't you reject them? What value is there in believing something that is clearly untrue? Christianity and Islam are absolutely, irreconcilably in conflict with Yahweh's testimony. They are therefore untrue. Therefore, rather than beneficial, they're cunningly counterproductive, a plague of death. Yeah. Well, you know, useless is providing a person, you know, that's treading water in a large lake, a glass of water. The glass of water is not going to kill them, but it's useless. The religion is like adding a pit viper to a room full of snakes and having it deliver all of its venom into your arm. That's religion. It's venom, not a glass of water.
Yeah,
it's far from useless.
Yeah, it's beyond useless. It's harmful.
Yeah, it's harmful. It's toxic. Yep. All right, fellas. This was great, JB. I'm glad that you could join us. I'm glad we got BTR up. It was really, really slow tonight, but I'm glad we got it up. And you'll be here next week, and then the following week you've got
not next week. I got some family in town, so it depends on what we have going. I'll try and sneak away next week, but I'm not going to be able to guarantee anything.
Yeah.
And the week after that, I know I won't, because we'll be out of the house and everything. So.
All right.
And that should be the first weekend we'll spend away from the baby.
Okay, and so long as we don't have hurricanes, or I think they call that a bomb cyclone, is what I
used
the word in Virginia. A bomb cyclone. That's when the barometric pressure falls by a catastrophic amount in a matter of 24 hours. It creates a bomb cyclone. You know, wind speeds that were devastating and lasted for days. So, you know, I'm. You've never heard me denounce climate change. Global warming, I'll denounce because, you know, the Earth goes through these long cycles. Yes, the Earth is warming, but it has very, very little to do with man, and man can do nothing to stop it. But it's these 600-year cycles that have transpired over many millions of years. But climate change, we are experiencing climate change.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about it. And it's not of man's making. We can't stop it. And this notion that we should invest, you know, billions of dollars and change the world and collectivize and save the planet. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the case. There's nothing man can do. And but the climate is changing. I don't think there's any question about that. These storms were unheralded. When you have trees with no leaves, trees with no leaves, and it's still they're still barren in the East Coast. They haven't put out leaves yet, and they're between 100 and 200 years old. And trees, oaks and hickories and maples and poplar that are 200 years old and have no leaves on them fall down in the wind.
That's amazing.
You know that something has happened that has not happened over the past 200 years.
Sure. Wow.
So, yeah, there really is climate change. But Yahweh told us that would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Earth was not made to last forever, nor was man.
Yeah.
We're certainly proving, right. All right, guys. Well, I enjoyed it. Back to your families, and happy Shabbat.
Yeah, happy Shabbat to y'all.
Shabbat.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.